Just Like Clockwork. It's Tuesday, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark, who was a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments, also a vintner, resides in Garden Valley, Texas. I guess I could say it's one of the garden spots of Texas, and maybe the world. Gorgeous place that you live in. That drive from little town called Ben Wheeler up to Garden Valley is one of the prettiest drives I think I've ever seen.
Yes, it is. I mean, there's of course a lot of ranches. Excuse me, a lot of ranches along the way, and maybe you'll see a longhorn steer or two or several. So it's got little ponds and rolling hills. So yeah, it's a beautiful drive.
One of those winding highways. That's a pleasure to drive too. So it's just it's just a very scene. I never. Before I came to Texas and visited you there, I never would have figured for gentle rolling hills and green stuff around. I always thought of Texas as West Texas when I drove across it. I only probably three times, but it seemed like it took forever each time. But this is a whole different view of Texas, yeah.
Yep, it's and if you just stay on Interstate 10, it's pretty flat the whole way.
Yes, it is.
You know, but if you get up to Interstate 20 and Interstate 30, then you get into some pretty areas of Texas.
Texas is really a gorgeous place, and it's a blessing to be here. And I'm sure you found that too. You've been there. You've lived in a lot of different places, and in fact, Seattle for a while. I think you came from Seattle to Garden Valley, did you not?
We did, yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was?
Well, we were in Garden Valley. Okay. We were in Garden Valley before we moved temporarily to the Seattle area. Mm-hmm. And then we came back to Garden Valley, and actually some property that we had bought before we had moved. So we just came back home to Texas.
Okay, I guess, and started a winery. Valle della Pace. By the way, there's a link to Don's winery on our page at brokenroadradio.com. You can kind of click there and see what he has to offer. But other than wine, what he has to offer is his experience as a biochemist, and specifically time in the pharmaceutical industry, although you can apply the same scientific principles to evolution, which we are wont to do here today. Article from the Institute of Creation Research, which is, by the way, linked in our chat window this morning at brokenroadradio.com, talks about, I prefer to call it evolution convolution, two primary reasons why evolution really is not established as a science, is it? I mean, they recognize the need for science, but they don't seem to have much of it there.
Well, the evolutionary scientist or evolutionary scientist would tell you that, oh, yes, it's very much a science, and oh, yes, it's been proven that man did evolve from ape-like creatures. So when you go to actually look at all of the evidence, it's really more a lack of evidence than anything else. And which is pointed out in this article as well, what they have found, and even a group of scientists from the Natural History Museum published a paper in Science, a very well-known science journal, and they basically came up and said, hey, all these people are talking about the ancestors for evolutionary, I mean, the fossil record for the ancestors of humans, but no one agrees. It seems like it's just a jumbled mess of little bits of data here and little bits of data there, but it doesn't congeal into a nice story. So all of the paleontologists, for example, have their own theories or their own guesses as to how man evolved from apes, as they say, but they don't have the evidence. They don't have the fossil evidence, and the evidence that they do have oftentimes is misread, and even their peers don't even agree with them. So one of the authors said evolutionary scenarios are appealing because they provide plausible explanations based on current knowledge, but unless grounded in testable hypotheses, and that they are not, they are no more than just so stories. So that's what we find from the fossil record. That's what we find from the paleontologist. And they give two explanations as to why there is so much controversy in this area. Although, you know, if you go into a science textbook, for example, it will give you the ape to man picture, which has long been debunked, but it's still in the textbooks. And they, of course, talk about evolution, and this is how we came about. We came about from the apes. But there's no basis for it, and they talk about it as if it was actual fact. And it's not. So the excuse that they use for all of this confusion is that, well, you know, there just isn't a whole lot of fossils out there for us, a hominoid fossils for us to do the research that we need to do.
No, and it seems that the paleontology is a competitive endeavor, because if you're a paleontologist and you find a skeleton that looks suspiciously human, you say, aha, I found it, the missing link. In the meantime, other paleontologists will criticize you and say, no, can't be, because of this and this and this. I found it. Here, this is my find. It's competitive. And it represents exactly what you would expect if there were a lack of evidence. It's they look at the fossil record with a predisposition and not finding what they've decided they should find. How do they know that the fossil record is incomplete? I mean, how do they know it's incomplete if they can't find what they're looking for if it doesn't exist?
Because obviously, I mean, we are here, so we obviously evolved. And so we just have to keep looking. And matter of fact, they don't even call it incomplete. They call it highly incomplete and fragmentary. So that means that we don't have very many pieces. And matter of fact, we don't really have any pieces to explain this conclusively that everybody agrees. And so... how do you know it's incomplete? Well, because you have a certain scenario in your mind, and you're trying to convince yourself as well as other people that your guess is the right guess. And unfortunately, there is no conclusive data supporting your guess that man came from ape. As a matter of fact, one of the foundational articles here goes so far as to say, not only is there incomplete evidence, highly incomplete evidence for apes, evolving into man, but there is highly incomplete evidence for apes going to modern apes. So they don't even have the evidence of, a gorilla and where the gorilla and the chimpanzee branched off from each other. Obviously, they had to, because they look very similar. One's a little bit larger than the other. Matter of fact, quite a bit larger. But they look and behave similarly, except that the gorillas spend most of their time on the ground as opposed to chimps in the trees. Be that as it may, they had to evolve from one another because they're both apes after all. But they can't even find the common link between them. So if they can't find the common link between a gorilla and, for example, a chimpanzee, how are they going to find the common ancestor between the apes and humans?
Well, not only that, but the whole history of this paleontological study as to the supposed evolution of man is rife with both mistakes. I mean, maybe honest mistakes, but mistakes and fraud, where people have actually put together creatures made up of bones scattered over a huge area and said, this is, for example, Lucy. Tell us about Lucy.
Well, Australopithecus is... Well, Lucy, you can go see her in the Brea tar pits. Actually, they have a she is all assembled and put together there, and you can go see her. The problem is that she is actually made up of monkey bones, ape bones, and human bones. And the bones weren't even found in the same area. They were scattered quite far from each other. Some of the bones were found in the same area. But after a careful examination, it was discovered that, hey, this is really a human bone. And, hey, this is really an ape bone. And the two shouldn't be put together, but they put her together anyway and claimed that they found the actual ancestor for humans. So this is what you find, is that it's either because of the enthusiasm. I mean, if you're going to be the first one to actually make the discovery and say, hey, I found a pre-humanoid hominin, skeleton, and here it is. I'm going to have all this fame as a paleontologist. There's a lot of pressure to make that discovery and to be the first one to make that discovery.
Well, kind of a competitive urgency. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and so they, in their enthusiasm and in their belief that is indeed how we evolved, or that we evolved, period. So if we evolved, we must be able to find the evidence if indeed we evolved. So they either put together all of this, in quote, evidence, which turns out not to be real evidence after all, because, as you say, they were disingenuous in finding you look at Lucy, for example, you think, oh, she was completely assembled. Her bones were all in one place. But as we just discussed, they weren't in one place at all. Sometimes, hundreds, if not thousands of feet apart from one another. So either you have something like that, or you have something like, oh, well, what about the Neanderthals? That, we got plenty of examples of those. Certainly, they were ancestors of humans, and they look completely different than what humans look like today. Well, they have found that Neanderthals cooked. And they didn't just, roast barbecued, roasted meat, for example. They actually use herbs in their cooking. They use legumes and various things, so various plants that they actually cooked. And the Neanderthals are an interesting story in themselves, because it actually tells the story of human migration from the Tower of Babel. These are, humans that were not too far post the flood, for example, lived longer than humans of today. And how do we know that? Well, the Bible tells us that the ages of the ancestors, for example, of Noah and Noah's sons, and gives us their age when they basically were born and when they died, so we know how long they lived. And so if these people migrated, one of the migrations was north, and migrated to that area, then what happens to humans' skulls, for example, as we age? Instead of growing bigger and bigger, You know, we pretty much stay the same height, and sometimes we shrink because the cartilages are being compressed. But our brows become furrowed. That is, the more bone is added to the brow line, and we begin to look more, if you will, ape-like than anything else. And so they find these skeletons then in caves, and you know, they find their tools and find you know, their clothing, their skins that they use for to keep them warm, because after all, this was not too long after the Ice Age in Europe that this migration took place. And and we conclude that, oh, because they look a little apish because of their they've got these furrowed brows, they must have been human ancestors. They must have been our ancestors long, long ago. And instead of understanding that these are old people, you know, some of them are really old. And so there are our ancestors, but they're not ape-like at all. They were fully human. So as we delve into this, and if folks are actually being honest, all of the evidence either points to one or two directions. Either the evidence that they find and say, aha, here is a pre-humanoid, if you will, or hominin, and either it winds up being a fully ape, or it winds up being fully human, and it's not a transitional form as they would have us believe.
Now, since the 1990s, there's also been DNA. I think it's the 1990s when the genome was deciphered, and is DNA an additional tool in their kit to prove evolution? And what has DNA told us? DNA study, DNA research, if anything.
Well, yes, it's that in itself is it can be confusing, because you can, for example, they looked at chimpanzee DNA, and they looked at human DNA, and they compared the two, and initially they said, oh wow, you know, we're 96% the same as the chimp. Well, what they didn't tell you is that they didn't compare the non-coding regions of the DNA. And so when you do that, then the homologous between the two DNAs, you know, diverges rapidly. And instead of being 98 or 96% homologous, now you're down to 80 to 76%. Homologous, and it turns out that, of course, the non-coding regions have everything to do with control and how certain enzymes and proteins are expressed, and ultimately winds up in our morphology and what the actual organism turns out to be. So just because we have similar proteins and between the two species does not then purport that we actually evolved from each other, from a common ancestor. It just means that, you know, for example, if a protein or an enzyme worked in one system, God created a similar type of system in other animals as well. So DNA, you know, they try to make it to be a guide, but, you know, we've got more similarities, for example, with a pig than we do with a chimpanzee. So, and I don't think anybody's saying that we necessarily evolved from a pig, You know, that would be the honest response when asked, you know, where did we come from?
Mm.
From DNA analysis.
Well, differences in DNA analysis, I uncovered in my reading, I think we mentioned this one time or two, is that if you look at just DNA, the differences in DNA between a Swede and a Frenchman, both Caucasian, is greater than between, say, a Frenchman and a Nigerian, a Caucasian to a black. So that this notion that there are different races of human beings needs to be thrown out the window. DNA does not support that view.
No, it doesn't support that view of separate races. Obviously, the only difference in skin color is the amount of melanin that is being produced, and of course that's expression of that particular, compound, from the DNA. It's not a marker as to who you are. And that, that is the question. Who are we? Where did we come from? Those are basic questions that man has been trying to answer since he could ask the questions. But the Bible gives us the answers very clearly. The Bible says that, we didn't evolve. It says that on the sixth day, yes, all the land creatures were made. We were also made on the sixth day, but at the very end of God creating everything, all of the animals and of course the fish and the birds and everything were created earlier, but man was created as God's last creative act here on earth. And chapter 2 explains more clearly how God formed the man from the dust of the earth and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. So when you go looking at the bones, for example, and you go trying to find, or DNA for this case, while you're trying to find where we evolved from, the answer is we didn't evolve. We were created as we are, not that long ago, not 6.5 million years ago, but less than 6,000 years ago or so. So we wouldn't expect to find any evidence in the fossil record for us evolving from something else.
And again, how would you know if it's incomplete if you're not finding what you believed would be there? That seems to be evidence against the hypothesis.
Well, it is evidence against the hypothesis, and it's evidence that maybe my guess is wrong. Maybe man just appeared on earth as the Bible describes that we were created completely formed by our creator as opposed to evolving. Now, in order to give up that hypothesis, the hypothesis that we evolved from apes, for example, or that we evolved from anything, you have to acknowledge that there is a creator God and that God created everything. And therein lies the problem. Man does not like to acknowledge that there is a creator God who created everything. And in particular, God created man in his own image. And so we have aspects of godliness, that is, not that man is godly by any means. Of course, there was the fall in Genesis chapter 3, but we have characteristics. For example, we are creative. I mean, we can think of something to create, like, let's put together a vehicle with wheels on it, and we, put together automobiles and things like that. So we have the ability to create. We have the ability to paint lovely pictures, for example, or to write beautiful poetry, or to write stories. God has made us to be creative beings, just like he is the ultimate creative being, of course. So for man then to say there is no God, which is all of this evolutionary stuff, there is no God, and so therefore we had to evolve, is not only ungodly, I mean, but it is flies in God's face that says, no, we don't want to accept that you created us in your image.
I remember listening to an interview with a paleontologist. I think it was on public radio, and it was years ago. And I was really taken aback because he was being asked questions about the fossil record and what's wrong with the theory of evolution. And finally, he just said, well, evolution is settled science. It's a fact. Well, why is it a fact? Because we say so. It's a fact. It had nothing to do with evidence.
Well, and, nothing to do with evidence. That's the problem. And there is no evidence. And even Darwin himself, who he based his hypothesis on the famous finches of the Galapagos Islands. But, a finch is a finch, regardless of whether it has a big beak or a thick beak or a small beak. It doesn't matter. It's still a finch.
Mm-hmm. Well, evolution convolution is a good way to describe it. If you'd like to read the article, again, there's the link to this this article we've been discussing in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. I also want to mention another link there. It is to creationmoments.com. Creation Moments is a reservoir, a library, a resource for the scientific information that explains to you the biblical story of creation. And if they would just start there, it's really not that hard to get to the truth. Well, keep looking out there, you evolutionists, and let us know how it goes for you, okay? Don, thanks very much. Appreciate your expertise and your good company this week. We'll look forward to next week, okay?
All right, sounds good, and you have a wonderful week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.